AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to preview this weekend's Hungarian Grand Prix. And when I say we, I mean all three of us, as I am joined by none other than Mr. Timo Albers-Daly and Miss Ellie May Taylor. How are you both?
Good, thank you. Spent the Friday, which is almost a week ago now, Goodwood Festival of Speed. I don't know why, but still my biggest highlight is seeing the Eagle Quest of Johnny Smith and Richard Porter's. Just, I remember, because we were just walking along, like through the car park to get to, because it's where we were parked, we had to get through about like two fields and a golf course. And going through sort of the fields, I was like, oh, like joking to Dad, like, oh, why didn't you bring your Hurst? And then I was like, wait, it's the Eagle Quest. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad I've seen it in the flesh now.
Oh, so they did what I did on the Sunday, which was get directed to the wrong car park and then find that it's a bit too wet to try and get to any of the other ones. The Jimny ploughed through it, but then I sort of was like, it's a one-way system from here. It's just directing me back to where I came from, which was a nightmare. But yeah, I spent 4 days at Goodwood and got a little bit sunburnt and quite exhausted. But anyway, Timo, what have you been up to?
I would say for British weather and sunburn, Fraser was at Silverstone when he was doing his Inside F2 stuff, I'm guessing, and despite all the weather there, still managed to come away quite sunburned. He's quite confused about it all, so British weather and British summer prevails regardless of what anyone intended to do. As for myself, I'm pretty good, thanks.
Fraser's quite fair-skinned, I think is a fair thing to say.
Well, I just caught a tan at Goodwood. That was it. I didn't burn, just caught a tan. Yeah. I went on Friday and it was cloudy, so I was actually quite surprised that I managed to do that.
Oh, the Thursday was roasting. But saying that, all 4 days there, Sunday meant I was also there for the Red Bull celebration, so I managed to get all of the drivers, Bob, Max and Checo, annoyingly, to sign my Red Bull cap.
Not all of the drivers, then.
Well, no, that's why I sort of suffixed it with bar. There was the second half to the sentence.
So a better way of saying it would have been most of them.
Yeah.
Ex-Red Bull people, because it's none of the current
non-current Red Bull drivers,
with the exception of Yuki and Danny, that are technically in the Red Bull fleet at the moment. And
yeah, it's not the same.
We get split.
So you managed
hairs.
To get people who are part of the Red Bull family that not even aren't Red Bull drivers anymore.
Yeah,
because they're not racing for Red Bull Racing, the Formula One team.
You say this.
I do. I said it.
No, we will get to this in due course. Anyway, let's jump into the podcast and we'll open up with some news. And of course, Lewis has signed with Ferrari for a 3-year contract. We, of course, know that he's moving to the Scuderia, but the details of it being a 3-year contract are quite interesting, really. Given that Mercedes originally offered him a 1+1, it's a small wonder he jumped over to the Italian side for a bit of job security for the foreseeable future. And ultimately, look at the broader picture, this is all right for Ollie Bearman too, as 3 years to settle and hone himself at a resurgent Haas will stand him in good stead when it comes to moving up to the big team. And it's not like he'll be ancient when the seat opens up. He's still a fetus, a very tall and still very baby-faced child. Decent to chat with though, but it's interesting that that's the detail that sort of possibly could have been a pressure point for Lewis to make the move.
I
was just going to say, I assume it has, you know, many a get-out clause on either side. But, you know, I know Lewis has got, you know, great pedigree, but, you know, Ferrari don't usually give a 3-year contract sort of off the bat, so they must have really wanted him.
Yeah, I think there's a drive at the moment from Fred Vasseur to really try and build this team up to be something quite impressive. And there were a lot of rumours swirling around what he had offered Adrian Newey to move over to Ferrari, something that is seeming a little less likely as time goes by, interestingly. But the sort of the rumours around the contract that he was being offered were immense, including working on Ferrari road cars, Ferrari hypercars, free house in Italy, plus sort of a huge amount of travel expenses. Do whatever
you want, tell me what you want, and I will give it to you.
Essentially the most blanchest of carte blanches to sort of really try and get him over. And I wouldn't be surprised if a similar style of approach was utilised when Lewis was searching for possible roles outside of Mercedes. So, yeah, it's
well, it does make sense. It's the minimum you'd want for Hamilton, because you look at 25, bed in year, get the lay of the land. 26, you see what the regulations are like in practice, and you get a bit more settled in that way, and you can kind of, even if the car is not all there, you can improve on everything except that, as obviously, as we've seen, that's a very important aspect if you want to succeed in the long term. And then that third year, not necessarily make or break, but it will definitely tell you, in the same way that rookies in F2 or something like this, you see kind of that first season bed them in, and then the second season they really get going, and then that third season, if you're like the Drugovich driver, is when you have this last chance to really go for it, and you can see them, you've got the best spectrum. And obviously, best case scenario, they do that on the second year, they hit the ground running, and then they do enough to keep him there and to want to have a contract extension maybe in whatever year it is at that point. But I think, like you say, kind of do whatever you have to get him there, because you've got this great continuity then with Charles and Lewis. And why would you not want to do everything you can possible to poach someone like that if he's interested? I mean, you know that if Verstappen became available, every team would be trying to do that as well. So it makes sense. As for Ollie Bearman, more of a fun fact, little reference here is that, as I've seen a throwback to how long this podcast is going later on in the episode, one of our first guests, Jesse, recently challenged him to an arm wrestling match, which you may or may not have seen.
Yeah, I did see Bella had challenged him to an arm wrestling match, and the internet has been awash with women a swoon for his biceps, which not a huge surprise particularly. But on the Hamilton point, obviously when he moved from McLaren to Mercedes, his first year at Mercedes 2013 was a great inset year. It was decent performing, fourth place overall in the standings against 2013 would have been a very strong Red Bull team at that point in time as well. And then 2014, feet are now on the ground, working with Mercedes, wins a championship. 2015, wins a second championship with Mercedes. So if he's able to replicate that sort of pattern with Ferrari, including the transition to new technical regulations, he could well do his championship in red. So it'd be nice to see.
They've got a band now, really, haven't they? They've got a singer sort of in Lewis, pianist in Charles.
Yeah, I mean,
well, it looks like a drummer.
They've also got doggy daycare as well. I don't know if you saw the recent social media video of Leo and Roscoe as well, enjoying a little play date, which was very sweet indeed. Speaking of the Italian team, we'll move at least to Monza and the Italian circuit, where it looks like from early spy photographs, Prima Variante has been redesigned while the circuit has been resurfaced. It's tricky to accurately describe the new layout. It looks like it sort of cuts back on itself a lot more to essentially tighten the chicane. And the angles of the shots that we've seen, or certainly I've seen, don't match, possibly skewing the idea of any changes. So it'd be one to sort of put a pin in and keep an eye on as it develops. But certainly that could be interesting when we get to Monza a bit later this season. We find that it's had a bit of a change, especially one that might increase the severity of the braking zone in turn one.
Which chicane is it?
Prima Variante, first cut turn.
That was quite tight anyway.
And it's possibly made tighter.
Yeah, and that was sort of...
If it is much tighter, Norris Verstappen round two, if we don't have it before then?
We'll wait and see. I mean, the car that Max landed on in 2021 was at Goodwood Festival Speed. Fred Vesti was running it across the weekend. That was the chassis that Max somehow managed to park his Red Bull on in 2021 at Monza. So it's a turn known for interesting things, and we'll see what it produces this year. Speaking of circuits, the sprint calendar for 2025 has been revealed, with China, Miami, Spa, Austin, Brazil, and Qatar taking up the six spots for the shortened races on Saturdays. And, I mean, I've done my best job of describing them in short terms of air, fair, not suited, decent to air, decent, decent. And I don't know if anyone else agrees with me, really.
I'd have a slight disagreement in saying that instead of fair for Miami, I'd also describe that with China and Spa for sprints as being woeful, and I do not see the point. Austin, Brazil, and Qatar have been pretty decent, Brazil in particular. I still would rather not have sprint races, but if they insist, I don't see why they don't try new tracks instead of tracks where they just don't work and have been proven to not work. I know the cost comes into it because they charge circuits extra. And I think, interestingly, Canada was offered a sprint and they went, no, we don't want that. We're still going to get a bunch of people to come over the entire weekend anyway. Why should we have to pay an extra $4 million or whatever it was for us to just do this instead when we're doing all right anyway? Which I find quite interesting, because if that's the reasoning behind it, it shows that there is still very much a lot of kind of friction when it comes to sprint races in certain venues going, no, because we like it as it is. It's not, there's nothing wrong with the old system. There's a reason that it's at the majority of the races and you don't have sprints left, right and center.
I'm surprised that they've taken off Austria, because that's always been a very good one, you know, because I think where it's a shorter track, you get more laps in it. You're better off, I think, doing it at shorter tracks where you're bound to usually
get a bit more action, which
is why Spa is so confusing for me, because that first one was just, yeah, Austin was weirdly all right, though. I think we were kind of not expecting much from it anyway, so it was able to get over that hurdle. But Spa is, I love Spa, but just not for that.
It's great for good Grand Prix.
It's awkward enough for the F2 and F3 sprint races, because you see how few laps they get, and you think if F2 and F3 can't make it work with a superior sprints format, then what chance does F1 have with this version?
Spa is for endurance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a circuit that rewards having a good long race. And yeah, I mean, the sprint race for F2 is 17 laps. It's not long. And I don't think the sprint race for F1 is much different to it either, but strange. Anyway, the sort of looping a bit back to our first point a little bit is Haas and Ferrari extending their technical partnership. Haas will continue to use Ferrari PAL units until at least the end of the 2028 season. Interestingly, that somewhat matches Hamilton's 3-year deal, which would open the seat for Behrmann, assuming Hamilton leaves after 3 years, thus releasing Haas from their tie to Ferrari, which is interesting timing, to say the least.
They do a straight swap, Behrmann for Hamilton. Hamilton goes to Haas. I'm saying that purely to make Henry salivate.
Depends how well Haas are doing, isn't it? But you've also got to remember, they probably want that 3-year deal in, because Haas are now the only team to use a Ferrari engine when Sauber become Audi. So,
although there is possible rumour that Renault or Alpine might be taking on Ferrari power units. No one really knows what power units they might be taking on, but it seems more and more certain by the day they're not taking on Renault ones, which is an interesting concept, especially considering that...
Do you think they should get Peugeot or Citroën in and really make this a French affair?
No, they should get Peugeot
double
back
down
in,
on the Frenchness.
Get Peugeot back in and dig out the HDI diesel units from the Le Mans races. Okay. Show me where in the rules in F1 you can't have a diesel car.
Slams giant rule book shut. Damn it, we don't have a rule.
All I'm saying is diesel is really energy dense. You could run less fuel in the vehicle, it would be lighter, and you would have a quicker F1 car across a race if it was diesel.
Still relies on Alpine having enough knowledge at the rest for the rest of the Grand Prix to actually be able to turn that into something where they succeed.
It'd be the Peugeot diesel engine from the Peugeot Le Mans hypercars of the early noughties.
And yeah, no, I'm still saying that with strategy and tyres and drivers and whatever, they still find a way if the things carry on as they'd mess it up.
There's still hurdles for them to be Alpine about it. You're very correct there. Speaking of Alpine, though, and crucially one of their drivers, who was also at Goodwood across the weekend, Sophia Flörsch, Flörsch and Chloe Chambers were testing recently at Silverstone. They tested a Formula 2 and Formula 3 car, respectively. Flörsch in the F2, Chambers in the F3. The concept was very much to look at further development of the feeder series chassis moving forwards, investigating a wide range of setups of tyre compounds, incorporating braking and steering efforts, as well as cockpit layouts for different frames. And the data collected along with feedback from the drivers will help set up the limitations for the F2 and F3 teams in 2025. So moving forwards, this is interesting because, of course, F2 and F3 cars don't have power steering like the F1 cars do. They have different levels of assistance, but equally, F2 and F3 are crucially the hurdles over which you must jump as a young budding driver. And if you simply are not physically the right shape, i.e. a woman, to drive them, that's a pretty significant hurdle.
That's what pretty much first sort of thought that was pretty crucial. I mean, they are now looking at cockpit layouts for different frames, which hopefully shows that both F2 and F3 sort of have a commitment to getting more women into feeder series. As I imagine the current car designs, you know, they're for a male-shaped body, which also means in crash tests, they're designed to protect a male body and not a female body as much. And it's like, if we're going to get more females into feeder series, we need to be protecting them as much as men.
You get this with road cars, actually. There's an interesting crossover to the amount of women that are injured in standard road traffic accidents is significantly higher than men, purely because the body frame size doesn't match sort of standard car seats, airbag placements, seatbelt placements, seat harness points. It's actually a really interesting sort of social science and vehicular engineering point. And it's interesting, we're sort of seeing this on a relatively public stage as well. It wasn't secret, this test. This was relatively well established and it was put on social media. So it's great to see Formula One being used as a crucible for active development that might genuinely better automotive design moving forwards.
This is something we've seen with cars before, F1, where they've had stuff that feeds down into everyday cars. And it also reminds me of when Tatiana Calderon last came back into Formula 2. I think it was with Cheruz at the time. There were a couple of races, Spa, I think, being one of them, and probably Hungary.
Zandvoort as well.
Possibly. But people criticised her for not doing well. And you're thinking, she's been out of this particular kind of driving for a while. She's in one of the worst cars on the grid. And the car is not catered to her in any way. And also you had this in W Series where they realized that we've got to actually make completely different race suits because they just don't work for us. And this was awesome to see, because it also reminded me of when Neri Amati and Ira Sudakova tested the F3 cars at Jerez when they were in W Series, kind of like the next step up for that, to kind of try and get the visuals on that to show that they're looking to move a step forward. And it's nice that this has been followed up by, and possibly a little later than I would have liked, but at least it's happening. And hopefully it translates to seats in those categories for both drivers next year. Maybe more likely Flörsch in F2, because it would probably piss off Marta Garcia if Chambers suddenly managed to get into F3 if she did decently this year by the end of the F1 Academy season. But again, maybe what she learns will be helpful for Marty then, and then she can get into F3, and then Chambers isn't too far behind her, because I think that's the thing. We were critical of why there was the sideways step into Freca, and you do see slightly more women there generally, but then it's like, maybe this is a large part of that. They're like, oh, actually, we need to figure this out, and we need to do a lot of research and all the rest of it, and this is possibly what we're seeing after all of the behind-the-scenes kind of research and going into that. So as long as it translates into something good, then it's what you want to see.
Freca is sort of being used as a holding pen, sort of to keep drivers active and driving before they actually make sure F3 is
safe
worthy
enough.
And safe enough and practical enough for sort of a transfer of female drivers as well, which is a good thing. At least there's this sort of plan put in place.
Even if we look at sort of the rally that we did, Jesse, the Rabbi Sprite, the harness fit me fine. I could do that. That was nice and tight. But then when we changed over to TR4, it was too big on my shoulders. It didn't even cover my waist. And it was just generally sort of too big for me.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're trying that on the smallest, like, sizing.
Yeah.
And even then, I mean, it was fine for
that. But I mean, you look back at sort of, even when it comes to body scaling issues, you look at things like Yuki Tsunoda and Lando Norris when they were younger, having to be Velcroed into their go-karts. It's not something that's purely gender in that instance. When you sort of broaden it out and you sort of go to examples that people are aware of and you go, okay, but what if you have someone driving who is consistently smaller? Maybe they have narrower shoulders and differently proportioned hips and are, generally speaking, shorter in arm and leg. What about then? And you sort of go, well, just extra cushions in the back of the seat? No, it doesn't work. A fun fact, actually, from Goodwood, as chatting with some of the drivers, Alex Albon and most likely James Vowles had to run the FW08 without any padding in the seat. Leah Block mentioned this when she was chatting with us, and basically Ollie Behrman wanders over and goes, Christ, how do you fit in that? It's tiny. And I go, yeah, well, Alex fits in. And Leah goes, yeah, but he had no seat. So basically, because he was too tall for the historic chassis, they just whip out most of the seat and the padding and just sort of lash him to the bare chassis, which can't have been comfortable for one. But yeah, it's one of those interesting points of, you've got to somehow tailor things more organically to the drivers you're installing in them. Demonstration runs in a historic Williams different to actually trying to encourage a new generation of drivers into.
Nah, take all basic. The seats out, give everyone an even playing field, and you just make them all go through a really hard time.
You've all got a race seat on a beanbag.
Mm-hmm.
Winner stays on.
You say that, but the first year of Goodwood, I sat in a beanbag chair, and it was the comfiest chair I have ever sat in, and I still dream about them to this day. I have never seen them again. I've even trialed different beanbag chairs at different motorsport events, and they nothing matches those beanbag chairs. They literally, I want one, and I don't know where they got them from.
I'll get in touch with Charlotte at Goodwood PR and find out. I'm hoping that when I'm in Budapest, I can get to one of the spas in the city because my back is still shot to pieces from 4 days of lugging camera equipment up and down the hill. Anyway.
A giant Hungarian woman abuses you.
As long as she's got strong thumbs to really sort of work out my shoulders, I don't care. We'll move towards Hungary then, as I intend to be doing tomorrow morning. And Hungarian Grand Prix, I'm heading there. I've mentioned it several times already in this episode. But interestingly, there is, if you haven't been listening, boo to you.
That'll be it.
Yeah,
why don't you come one more time?
I'm going to the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Is it this year or are you going next year?
This year. I haven't planned out. I've got to fit it in around my sister's wedding, which crucially she planned to not.
Oh, she's getting married in Hungary as well.
Not in Hungary, no, but she planned it to not clash with a Grand Prix so she could invite George Russell, who lives in the same block of flats as her. Anyway, I had somewhere I was going with this. That's it. Lando Norris.
You now know Billington's a bougie.
Yeah, very.
You didn't know that before.
And Esteban Ocon have fantastic Hungarian Grand Prix helmets. Both of them have been done in like the painted porcelain, the same as the trophy. Esteban Ocon earlier this week received the Alpine chassis that he won the Grand Prix with in 2021. And crucially, this is reportedly the weekend that he is set to announce his move to Haas. So we'll wait and see what happens there. It makes sense. It's the last sort of race that he won.
I'm glad that there's a different rumour about someone else signing somewhere. It's not just Carlos signs again. And we're like, no, not this weekend either. Let's try with someone else. Let's see if that happens.
I haven't got rumours on signs, but I do have rumours from the Red Bull paddock, which is Yuki would replace Tsunoda at Red Bull.
Yuki would replace Tsunoda.
I'm very tired. Yuki would replace Perez, which would open the door for Lawson and Hadjar to team up at VCARB, Visa Cash App, RB, Toro Rosso, Minardi, whatever. So that is reportedly the rumour as to what's going on at the moment. But
I would find it hilarious if Hadjar got into F1 next year because that car is getting demolished repeatedly.
Oh, it's going to be...
Like, Yuki is going to look so smug. We're like, wow, you thought my first year was costly for you guys. Ho-ho-ho-ho.
Remember the Gasly and Albon years in RB? Or Red Bull, even? Just think about the chassis damage. Anyway, that's the rumour from sort of the Red Bull side of things. Be interesting. Apparently, Bottas is also moving back to Williams, replacing Sargent, who's definitely off to Prema. And
Bottas should go to NASCAR and be done with it.
They should have had
Bottas this year, and then when going up the Goodwood Hill, it'd basically be Keke Rosberg in his own car.
Yeah, he could have cosplayed as Keke Rosberg, which would have been really cool, actually. I'd have quite liked to have met
Bottas. I have a joke that I'm not going to make there. But you all know what it is. And take a guess.
I don't think...
Jesse's a little slower than Ellie Mae on this one.
Is it because he looks like Keke Rosberg? Because he's got a moustache?
I'll tell you later.
Tell me later. Okay, anyway, that's the general rumours that I'm aware of at the moment when it comes to sort of paddocks and people moving around the place. So we might as well jump into then our predictions and something that's probably a little better to predict, which is the results of the Grand Prix and our pole position. And you two have gone for George Russell.
He's done it before and Mercedes are looking good, is my argument.
Very true. I'm going to be...
And they like Hungary.
He does like Hungary. However, going to be contrarian, I'm going to go for Piastri.
I mean, I'm not against it, aside from you getting a point.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice to see him do it. You'd hate me getting a point. It's swings and roundabouts.
Hate's a strong word. I don't think I'd put that much energy into it.
It's great to know that I don't live in your head rent-free that much. Podium-wise, you've both gone for Hamilton somewhere in there. And that's about all the similarities I can draw.
I'll tell you why I've gone for Hamilton. A, wouldn't it be awesome? But B, Andrew Shovland, the Mercedes trackside engineer, has said that the biggest difference for Hungary between everything else has been that the test of whether we have got on top of the long run performance in hot conditions, because in Barcelona and Austria, they couldn't match Norris and Verstappen in the long runs. Those two cars were well ahead of us. But Hungary is known for some interesting weather. So if we get a bit of interesting weather, it doesn't matter if they can't match them in the long runs there, because they were in for a good time potentially then. Well, and we saw what Lewis could do in the wet in Silverstone.
Well, you say interesting weather. They've recently today had storms which have flooded most of the circuit, and also the storms have been so violent they ripped the roof off of the newly refurbished McLaren motorhome, which had only just been rebuilt after catching fire. Not a good year to be a McLaren motorhome at all. But yeah, there was huge amounts of hailstones and water up to around sort of mid-calf height in the paddock and pit lane, which is the highest point on the circuit as well. So yeah, although it's supposed to be about 36 degrees tomorrow, 34 on Friday, 32 and 30 across the rest of the weekend. Getting cooler, but enough to dry out the circuit.
This basically means that we will get to laugh at you a lot when we see you next, because you'll be about the same color as the Ferrari.
Yeah, no, I did actually pick up some SPF facial moisturizer, so I won't be too bad.
Not going to make any difference.
Arms are going to look like...
And you probably didn't pick up a high enough one.
It's SPF 20, yeah. But my arms are going to look like I've been fisting red paint. Timo, the rest of the podium.
Sainz P2 and Verstappen P3. There we go. Sainz needs it, and Verstappen, he's got to be there somewhere. Ellie, mate, please get us away from whatever he was doing to himself.
I've gone for a George Russell win, and Oscar Piastri second, and Lewis Hamilton third.
What against it?
Well, like I said, Mercedes do well around here, but I also thought I've got to put a McLaren in there somewhere. They'll probably get a podium.
Norris, if it was Piastri.
Yeah, Norris isn't allowed on there because he broke Lando's last year. He broke Max's last year.
Oh, it's like Yuki replacing Tsunoda. I get it.
We're all doing it. It's the heat, clearly. Meanwhile, podium wise, I'm going completely wild. Piastri, Leclerc, Gasly. See what happens.
Sure, why not? I mean, I'm going to put this down to you getting so sunburned on Sunday that it reverberates back through the timeline to now for you to make this prediction to think it's a good idea.
Heat stroke.
Yeah, this is precursory heat stroke. That makes sense. I can work with that. Timey-wimey magic. Fastest lap, Timo, it's time for you to pick someone new, finally.
Not Carlos Sainz. That's who I'm going to choose, which means he's probably going to do it two weekends in a row now, the bugger. But I'm going to go for Piastri instead because he's a speedy boy.
He is indeed a speedy boy. Ellie May, you've gone for one half of the Mercedes garage.
Yeah, I was tempted to put Carlos Sainz just to see what happened. But no, I've gone Lewis Hamilton.
A sound prediction. I'm going to go down the middle and go Max Verstappen on that one. I've gone pretty wild with the rest of my predictions. It'd be nice to get a point this weekend. So wild predictions then. Ellie May, we'll start with yours and then we'll get to Timo's.
I've gone for no DNFs. It was
ballsy.
My wild prediction initially is going to be a really boring race because Jesse's attending.
I mean, I attended Abu Dhabi 21. That was pretty good.
Yeah, but I don't think we can rely on you for pausing that.
I did Monza 2022, which was pretty bland right up until the moment that Danny Ric retired his car.
Exactly.
So swings and roundabouts.
So
it's a 50-50, so we're going to say probably
Yeah.
Fair enough.
No DNFs.
I'm going to go 8 DNFs. I reckon we're going to see something interesting. I'm not going to say Bottas bowling style interesting, but I think heat. And at this point in the season, we might see some mechanical retirements. So it's going to be interesting to see who does and who doesn't. But it might open the door for Timo's prediction to come true, though.
Just thinking, what haven't I done yet? Because I'm trying to think of bolder and bolder things as we get into the season. And it's time to up the ante a bit, I think. So stake double points, because they've got to score a point or two at some point, right? Right?
Logistically, statistically speaking, yeah. I mean, your bold predictions so far have been both Red Bulls not in the top 10. Haas, Alpine, Nardi stake, and Williams score points. Doohan subs into an Alpine and scores. Merck, P4, 5. Williams in the points. Loints in Miami was your prediction. Double Williams points for Imola. Stroll announces retirement in Monaco. Aston double points Canada. Zero retirements for Spain. Both Williams into Q3 in Austria. And then Albon P5 in Great Britain. So I think we're certainly ramping up for crazy with some of these.
But yeah, you know what? It's going to happen.
Stake double points.
I know, I'm running
out. Watch them take each other out into turn one.
I'm running out of crazy.
I believe you've got plenty, don't worry.
I just every time it gets to predictions, I don't know, I feel like
you need a Timo masterclass course in wild predictions. I offer very good rates.
I don't like what the rates might be already, so no.
Get your mind out of that area. That's not what I mean.
It's exactly what he means. Anyway, with our predictions settled, there is very little more to cover going into this Grand Prix. I think Mercedes have got upgrades. I don't know what they are yet. That's pretty much it. There's not a lot of news, weirdly, at the back of the British Grand Prix. So we'll be back for a review of the Hungarian Grand Prix, possibly a little bit later in the week, next week. That's all we've got time for on this week's episode. In the meantime, if you want any more from us, Ellie May, where can the people find you?
I will probably at some point post pictures of Goodwood. I haven't got around to it yet, mainly because it just sort of stresses me out that I don't know what to choose. So, yeah, other than that, maybe I'll go find a chiropractor. I don't know.
Worthwhile. Timo, where can the people find you?
This weekend, you can find me down at the Formula E in London for the doubleheader season finale. So if you see me, come and say hi.
Ooh, lovely. And if you want more from me, you can find me, of course, on social media as @JesseOnCars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. Pick up our latest issue. It's got all my coverage from Goodwood Festival of Speed in it. Lots of my lovely pictures and some great words too, indeed. And obviously, you can also find me at the Hungarian Grand Prix this weekend if I hadn't mentioned it already. Hello and welcome to any of our listeners in Tappahannock, Virginia, which doesn't have a brewery as far as I could see, but it is just around the corner from Quantico, home to the Marine Corps base. I won't launch into any jokes about the Crayon Corps, so we'll wrap up this week's episode and leave you to enjoy the Hungarian Grand Prix. I know I will. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.